The platform. Step up and speak out.
This is a good evening, ZFM Stereo, my station, your station, the hottest radio in town. The name is Larry Kwedera. It is The Platform. And welcome on this, the 5th of December, 2018. It's just gone 21 minutes before the hour of, 29 rather, minutes before the hour of 8 o'clock. And I'm with you until 8 o'clock, and on this particular program. Then Mona Lisa is coming up straight afterwards with the Y Zone. Just to remind you of some of the frequencies you can listen to us on: 91.3 in Chimane Mani, Kariba, 105.3 Victoria Falls, 106.5 Kanyanga, 98.2 Gweru, 104.3 Bulawayo, my hometown, 106.7, and we are broadcasting out of Harare, where our frequency is 106.4. If you want to listen to us over the internet, it's www.zfmstereo.co.z. If you want to download the TuneIn app, which is available for free, just go to download the TuneIn app wherever you want to download it from, and just look for ZFM Stereo, and you can listen to us live and in charge. And the conversation is live, which means our WhatsApp number 0731 168 045 is already open, and so you can get in touch with us in as far as that is concerned. And also, if you want to get in touch with us on Twitter, it's at ZFM Stereo. On Facebook is facebook.com/ZFM Stereo. Now, in as far as today's program is concerned, Zimbabwe's cyber threat landscape has matured over the years due to the usage of high dependence on ICTs, mobile, cloud, and web and desktop applications. The number and impact of cyber attacks and crimes are on the increase. And I think, in as far as understanding that, there have been so many threats that have taken place over the last couple of years, and even affecting us in Zimbabwe, where websites have been hacked and people's identities have been stolen, and even where you've got situations where there's this thing called ransomware. We're going to talk about some of those things, among other things, because it's in the midst of a conference that's called the put together by Ministry of Information, Communication, Technology and Curio Services. That's called National Cyber Crime and Security Week, and essentially it runs under the theme Think Before Click. And the aim is to promote online security and safety by cultivating a cybersecurity culture among internet stakeholders. So today we want to cultivate the kind of behavior, and particularly one of the key areas is to do with children. We'll also look at other issues, but also particularly do with children and their access to the internet. And in the studio today, I've got in the studio Mr. Godfrey Mataga, who is the head of IT at Zimpost. Welcome to the program.
Good evening. Welcome.
So the first question I ask you, I mentioned it in passing, but in real terms, why is cybersecurity a big issue in Zimbabwe at the moment?
Cybersecurity has become a big issue because Zimbabwe is now part of the global village in terms of communications. So you notice that in the last 15 years, for example, the usage of internet and the extent to which business is now depending on internet is increased dramatically, and that also attracts people who have got devious motives, hackers to be specific, people who would want to access information which is not theirs. So as a country, it's now high time that we need to make sure that we put in place mechanisms to safeguard our information on the superhighway.
So when we talk about what are some of the risks that are there in play as far as this is concerned?
The risks that are there, if you talk in terms of business, for example, there's a risk that your information can be stolen, business information, by people who are not supposed to access that information. For example, a rival can steal your information, business information, and they can run with your maybe research that you have been working on for years, and they can get it for free. The other risk is some devious people can just deny you access to your systems. If you depend on computerized systems, for example, which are online, people can just prevent access maybe for hours or days, and it can adversely affect your business. And on another dimension, when you look at the content itself that is on the internet, not everything that is there is productive or positive. So there is some information that can negatively influence people, especially the young people or children. So that's why conscientization of cybersecurity and the threats that are associated need to be highlighted so that people are aware.
So I wonder, before we talk about particular issues that do affect younger children, I know it's a global question that's taking place at the moment, like the issues of a freedom of expression, but at the same time, people like you will come and say, okay, there are risks at play. How do you balance the two?
Yeah, it's a difficult issue to deal with. You can't in the cyberspace, the issues of freedom of expression, you can't really have a straight jacket, because there are various people in the cyberspace, various countries, various religions, various persuasions. So it's kind of difficult to have a standard. So to say that you want to have your way as an individual or as a group of people or as a country, it can be very difficult. So the best is to try and put in place measures to make sure that maybe what gets to you is what you want, and maybe what people access is most of it is productive, not something which is dangerous to society.
But then a lot of there are a lot of people who say, okay, look, there are all sorts of encryptions that have been created. For example, I think WhatsApp has got a 256 encryption, and there's so many platforms that have created multiple encryptions. And even nowadays, companies have become more open about when they receive a threat. I know that the other day I got somebody who, you know, claimed that they got my Discus password from somebody else, but I knew that there was a Discus threat that had taken place, and my data had become available, and that data was invalid. When I'm sitting at home, how do you help me reconcile things that are not factual, that are not actually really scary or whatever the case may be, as opposed to the things that actually provide a real threat?
That's another the dimension you are raising is one other dimension. You know, these people, they can also do mind games with people. If they want, for example, to extort you, that's what they can do. They can pretend that they've got very very critical information that belongs to you, when in fact they might not have. For example, when you look at these people who are coming up with these devious ransomware, when they hit you, or when they've not even hit you, sometimes they can threaten you and tell you, we've got your information, and if you don't pay this amount, we will splash it all over, or we'll do this or that. So it's kind of very scary and dangerous out there. That's why this awareness is in place, to make sure people are aware and people know the tricks that these people use in the cyberspace.
Before we go into the thing, are there any tricks in as far as that is concerned? What should I worry about if somebody comes up with something like that?
Yes, to start with, you need to recognize that this is maybe a hoax or a trick. If once you recognize that, probably it will keep you at ease. But sometimes, if you don't know, if you are not aware of how this thing works, then sometimes you can get into all sorts of panic. Probably sometimes you don't even have the information that they are claiming they have about you. So if you know this is what the game they play, sometimes it helps. And this awareness, that's why it is very, very important. A lot of these things, the ordinary person out there may not be aware, But we all of us, if we check right now, probably everyone now has got a smartphone which can go onto the internet. And probably if you look at urban areas, probably 20 to 50% of homes have got a computer of some sort which can go onto the internet. But many people are not aware of what can happen on the internet and what they can come across on the internet. So this awareness, it will help in that direction.
0731-168-045. Get in touch with me. Tell me, what are you most afraid of when it comes to the internet? What is the thing that scares you the most? If you have any questions that you want to ask, expert in the studio to talk about that. I know that that aspect of phishing that he's talking about is a big thing. And I want to talk a little bit more about phishing before I talk about other issues. There are instances like the old school version. I call it old school now, even though the internet is so young, a relative compared to other forms of communication, where somebody says, I've got, I'm a young prince from Abu Dhabi or Nigeria or whatever the case. If you send me $5, you will get $200 million. Tell us a little bit more about that.
That's, I think, like you rightly said, that's the earliest forms of these devious tricks that people started using. It started, for example, through email, basic email. Someone could somehow get your email or hijack your email. There are people who harvest emails for your own information. And they can create a high-sounding and seemingly credible story, you know. They will purport to know you very well or to know someone that you know, and then they will try to use that to extort money from you. So it is always important, first of all, to know this person who is saying they know me, do I know them? Have I ever communicated with them? And then if it's someone suspicious, then you know definitely this is potentially a hoax or some one of those things. So you the first thing that you then do is don't reply to that email. Just delete it. And then you'll be safe. Because sometimes if you reply, you're further putting yourself at risk. Because sometimes when you reply, this guy will even probably send some malicious software onto your machine and further trap you. So the best thing is, if you're suspicious and you don't like that person, delete that email.
So what are some of the risks that could happen for me? Sometimes, in effect, before I even go ahead, tell us what phishing is and how it affects in issues such as identity theft.
It's like on websites. These people put some scripts or some...
Okay, let's start from the beginning. When you say on website, looks like scripts. Mm-hmm. When I get the email and give me an example. Okay, so it looks like my bank. Let's give that as an example. And it looks like the kind of email that my bank was sent to me. Mm-hmm. So what happened there? What are the risks that I'm talking about then as far as cybersecurity is concerned?
The risk is, if it looks like it's your bank, the risk is you might expose your critical information about maybe your bank account or maybe your credentials. Like these days we have internet banking, so the more you try to entertain this kind of like email, probably you might end up exposing that information, and then these people may end up.
Okay, we've gone a little bit further than the actual problem. What I say is, I get an email address, mm-hmm. Or rather an email that comes, and this person claims it's my bank. How do I check to make sure that it's my bank actually and not somebody's pretending to be my bank?
One quick way of doing that is, if you get to phone your bank directly, you ask them, I'm Godfrey Mataga, I've got an account with you, I received this email. Would you be aware, or would you be in a position to know if this email is originating from you? Definitely, if the bank has sent you an email, they will be able to confirm. And then if they don't confirm that they did that, you know definitely it's coming somewhere devious.
Is there a way for me to check it without having to call the bank?
Sometimes it's not. especially for an ordinary person. But
no, but I'm saying we're talking to ordinary people right now. So are there things that I can check as an ordinary person? Say it's like I get this email at 11 p.m. and, you know, I'm looking at the email right now. Even right now, it's 7:45 p.m. and my bank is not online in as far as receiving my phone call right now. Mm-hmm. What do I do right now?
Some of the quick things to take note of is normally bank do not send such emails or some such things at odd hours. For example, you get an email at 1 a.m. Or notifying you or trying to ask for some information about your, probably the only thing you can get these days maybe is your balance or something, but not to say, hey, this is your bank, we would want to do this and that and so on. The best is if you really, people now really need to be skeptical when it comes to these things. You need to, the first time you receive that email, just be skeptical and try to be critical.
Okay, so just to put this a little, to push this question a little further where I'm trying to get it to, say I got this email at midday and I'm only seeing it now. So you're telling me, okay, there's the other safeguard that says if it's out of business times, I should be worried. Then it doesn't work. One could argue that the server may have delivered it late, so maybe I might not necessarily distrust it.
Yes.
But from looking at the email, are there things that I can look at?
Sometimes, if why I don't want to suggest some things which I know ordinary people might not be able to handle properly. For instance, if you try to respond to it, sometimes you may end up seeing that the original email that it what was purporting to be, where it's coming from, is actually not the email. But why I don't want people to do that, you might end, you know, inside an email there is hypertext, text which when you click,
so in other words is hidden scripts, if you want to call it.
Yeah,
that.
Exactly. So if you try to play around with it and you are not very familiar with these things, you end up making things worse. So that's why I'm so strongly suggesting that when you see it and you are not sure, before you click anything inside it, before you try to manipulate it, either wait and find out through other means like a phone call, or just delete.
Okay, 0731-168-045 to get in touch with us. Going to take a quick break. When I come back, I want to I'm going to read some of the things that you're worried about in as far as the internet. Because no questions as yet, but there are things that people are saying, you know what, when it comes to the internet, this is something that I worry about completely. It's something that scares me, doesn't let me go to sleep. So get in touch with us on 0731-168-045. Just give you one of the things actually that is come up a couple of times is identity theft. And we're going to have a quick chat about that. And also the safety of children. We're also going to talk about that on ZFM Stereo. My station, your station, the hottest radio in town.
The platform. Step up and speak up.
ZFM Stereo, my station, your station, the hottest radio in town. And someone says, I'm worried about people finding out what I've been watching on the internet. I'm not going to ask what the details are around that. Somebody says, I'm worried about the fact that, I read that earlier on, my identity theft. Somebody says, I'm worried about the fact that I have no security over the information that I've given over the internet. How secure is the information I share on the internet? It's a very good one. Get in touch with us on 0731-168-045. Tell me what you are worried about in as far as internet security is concerned. It's Cybersecurity Week this week, and the theme is Think Before Click, and is to promote online security and safety by cultivating a cybersecurity culture among internet stakeholders. So, as I said, 0731-168-045. That's the number you get in touch with us in as far as this is concerned. So that's one there, that identity theft. We talked about it a little bit when it talked about phishing. But there are other ways of getting your identity theft. I want to take it around actual use of the internet, because the other ways, for example, we've been hearing about swipe machines, which also somebody is sitting right there and they might steal your identity, or you might, you know, different ways that your identity may be stolen. Can you give us examples of how using the internet in an unsafe environment could result in your identity stolen?
For example, with the emails that we use, I will not mention the names for some of the providers, but there are some internet-based emails that we use. So if you are not careful, especially if you go to some unsafe sites regularly, people can track you, and sometimes, for example, they can hijack your email. And once they have hijacked your email, they can masquerade as you. And that's an easy way of trying to masquerade as someone when you are not that actual person. And imagine someone spraying out a lot of emails, sending out information that you would send yourself using your email. Because when someone knows your email, for example, your friend or maybe your Munyarikani, and then you send maybe some information which is compromised, you know, it is not good for you. And when someone receives that email, there's no way of knowing that it's not you. Probably if they know your character, probably they might just suspect, but at the first instance they will think it's you. Only after you have seen that this is what happened and you try to do damage control, but the damage will have been done. So that's one way your identity can be stolen in the cyberspace.
But I mean, I'm thinking I'm at home or I'm in a queue somewhere right now. My name is Njabulo Kupane, for example. Why would they care about my identity? I'm not anyone. I'm not famous.
It's like someone wants to, they don't want to use their name to do some dead stuff. So they will use your name instead. For example, this is not exactly cyber, but it's in the realm of communications. Someone can steal your SIM. You know, before we used to use SIM cards for cell phones, right? Without registering them. And now you have to have it registered. And if you use it without being registered, the mobile network operator will be in trouble with the regulator. So it's one way of trying to make sure that no one will be able to use that cell phone, SIM card for long if they are not the owner of that card. And the same goes for the cyberspace. The example that I've just given, emails, for example, when you use these internet emails, you need to be careful. There are certain do's and don'ts when you use such emails, and you notice that even business, sometimes they do not encourage to send business information using internet emails. They would, or rather people use corporate emails. It's a small way of trying to make sure we stay away from such.
Okay, I'm going to read a couple of messages here. 0731-168-045. No risk at the moment. There's some advice, but send in one thing you're worried about the internet. That's what I want to hear as much as possible from. But Jerry Marimo, thank you very much for getting in touch with us. If you receive an email claiming to be from your bank, as soon as the email requests for personal or security questions, just ignore that email. Simple. And Ben, all the way from Poland, thank you very much for getting in touch with us, says, one sure way to see a scam email is to look at the unsubscribe link. If it's a picture, do not click. That's in capital letters and two exclamation marks. If many of the links are in the picture form, then it's a red light. Another easy way is to hover over a link. Firefox or Chrome shows a web address at the bottom. If the domain is the same as the bank, then it's safe. And then if it's safe, and if it contains weird names like BitLink or AdLink or other quick money sites, do not click. Thank you very much, Ben from Poland, for that quick piece of advice. Someone who says piracy is what they're worried about. I'm not sure how that works. That's Susan Marisa from Zimba. Thank you very much for getting in touch with us. And also, yeah, just do get in touch with us on 0731-168-045. Identity theft has become a big thing. I see a lot of things that getting my identity stolen. I guess it is becoming a thing. But what I do want to ask next is also, now, when we think of children, because I may understand how the internet works and that sort of thing. I get it, and because I've used the internet for most of my life. I think I've started using the internet in the early 90s. The question I ask is, I don't know if I had the same safe worries and safeguards that were needed as far as I was concerned. Should children go to the internet nowadays, given how scary you've made it sound?
The internet is the good side and the bad side. Yeah. And for if you talk with respect to children, there's a lot of educational stuff which has been prepared by experts which children can make use of and benefit a lot. You know, in this age of people are very busy, parents, they hardly have enough time to teach their children even homework. So sometimes internet can be a very good resource. So children, I don't see why we should strictly say they should not access the internet. However, there is a bad side, which brings us to this program, where we are saying we need to let our children know that as much as they go there, there is this bad side. It's just like even in the old days, a child could want to go and play somewhere in the neighborhood. As a parent, you would want to know where they are going to play, the playground, is it safe, who are they going to be playing with, you know, such things. Now the terrain has changed. It's the internet, the cyberspace. The children, even as young as 5, they actually know a lot about the internet, and they can actually do a lot of things that some adults cannot do. So to say they can't go to the internet, I think we won't win that war as parents. But what we need to do now is to come up with a plan to make sure that the adverse side of the internet does not become the champion.
So, before I ask the other question, have we got statistics on how internet may be influencing children, or are we just thinking about these things because, we, you know, as you grow older, you become more conservative than children?
While there are no, I might not be aware right now of official statistics, especially for Zimbabwe. I definitely know that there are issues with children. For example, simple things like addiction, for example, to the internet. You find at the slightest instance, your child wants to go to the internet. They can't even play. They can't do other things that will make their mind exercise. All they want is to go to the internet. It's not good for a child, especially a person who is growing. They need to do other things. They need to play. They need to even think without using a computer. They need to talk with their peers, you know, to develop other skills. So addiction, you can clearly, or while there are no statistics, if you monitor your child, you can even see that probably they are getting into that territory. Or if you visit a friend, you can see that maybe this place, the children are in trouble.
But aren't you worried that we are talking about something that we haven't properly diagnosed? Or somebody could be sitting at home and their child doesn't show a development, but some other child shows development.
Yeah.
If we don't have the statistics, what are we doing?
Yes, we may not have the statistics, but when you see a whole country coming up with a program that will run for a whole week,
No, I'm just asking, because yeah. if you say of a whole country
yeah.
can come up with a program that's running the whole week, I could decide that there's something that bothers me, and because it bothers me and I find enough people of influence, I could make it a big issue. I'm not saying that there's no effect mm-hmm. on children. Mm-hmm. And as far as anything could concern somebody, I'm sure there are people who worried about the internet worried about the time when their children went out to play in the 80s.
Exactly.
And they had their own worries. Oh, children then. Exactly. There's a worry that, you know, the big red monster might come and get them. In the 70s, oh, no, the 60s were much safer, much better place. In the 50s, no, the 30s were much better. How do we know that there's actually a big risk if we don't have the statistics?
Why I may not be able to qualify the availability or absence of statistics. What I know is...
So are you saying there may be statistics?
Yes, there may be statistics, yeah.
You've not heard of them?
I've not personally been able to actively track those, but there may be some statistics.
So, okay, yeah. So give me some, because I will argue, and quite aggressively, that we could say that children are affected in a certain way, by the internet, which we could define as negative, but and call it addiction. But when I was young and I used the phone a lot to call my friends or call what was then defined as a girlfriend, my parents could say, "Oh, my child is addicted to calling on the phone." Is there not an overreaction? And if there isn't an overreaction, and it's merely a communication issue, what should happen as a parent?
Even the example that you are giving of a phone, like the mobile phone itself these days, it's already a problem on its own, because there's WhatsApp, there's Facebook, and people the easiest gadget to use, which most people have, is the mobile phone. And I want you to take notice. If you go into any place where there are maybe 5 or 6 people, you'll be surprised to know that if they are not talking, everyone is quite busy on their phone. Probably they are on WhatsApp, Facebook, or basic internet, you know. It's like this technology it has got its good side, but there are certain things that people need to be aware of, and if they are not careful, it can become a habit. For example, sometimes people are no longer able to have time to think, you know, because at the slightest availability of idle time, the best thing that a person can do is to take out their phone and go onto the internet.
But, I mean, for the purposes of this discussion, I'll ask this question, that have we done enough of a study to say, could this just be the evolution of communication? This is how humans communicated. At some point, we used smoke signals. We don't use smoke signals anymore. Back then, somebody might have just said, "Hey, my child is addicted to using smoke signals because they're always sending smoke signals to their friend." So, how do we know it's a problem without the data? And pursuant to that, given the fact that even the arguments around whether internet addiction is actually a real thing, so the science, the data, those who have done data across the world are actually not convinced that it's actually an addiction. How are we having this conversation about the adverse or otherwise effects of the internet if we don't have the data?
Right now, the two places where you can, as an individual, where you can see the effects are either at a workplace or at home, if you've got internet access at home, or if you've got gadgets that are internet enabled. You at work, there are some workplaces here in Zimbabwe where they've decided that there shall be no internet for everyone whose business does not ordinarily require internet during certain times, because they know it can disrupt productivity. People may end up spending more of their time on the internet, WhatsApp, Facebook, and other stuff, which may not be productive. This is these are things that are real, that have been observed by at the workplace. Like what I said earlier on, unfortunately, I didn't have time to do that homework. If I knew that question was coming, I was going to do some bit of homework to find if, as a nation, we now have a statistics for this kind of thing. Then if you go into the home, where the people have, in the last 5 years, there has been a proliferation of ADSL, home internet, fiber to the home. You know, people can now have internet at home. And once you have got an iPad and a cell phone, you can access that internet. So you can actually observe at home the behavior of children, or not only children, even adults. How they use the internet and how it consumes their time, you know. So whilst we don't have authoritative or official statistics, people out there, they know this thing is becoming something that is affecting our lives, and we need to control how we use it. It's more so in at certain levels, maybe children or at the workplace.
Okay.
Why?
I'm going to ask one question, but take a break. While I can understand issues around child development, so child development at the age, I mean, the psychology, the science around this comes out, children shouldn't be exposed to screens between 0 and 3 years of age, and then you need to start, you know, making sure that the amount of hours that they get exposed to the screens at certain times and so forth. So in terms of childhood development, we can have the discussion around that in as far as child development is concerned. But children are being brought into the digital age. So the children that are coming into this world are not analog children.
Exactly.
So while we want to sit here and pontificate about why children are not going to play around with other kids in the street and so forth, they are now digital children. And in, you know, schools, classrooms right now, even across the world, this is a debate that's happening across the world. And I'm hoping that it's taking place at this conference, that children are being taught in what we call analog classrooms, whereas children are now digitalized. Their capacity to spend, 30 minutes just listening to somebody talking has become reduced because we use double screens even when watching TV. So, how is that defined as a problem when it has become a habit? Much the same way that somebody who started listening to radio for the first time in the 30s, it is now a radio listener because it's become part of their lifestyle. How do you define it as a problem when it's become how humans actually interact?
Yes, when humans develop, I will say development in quotation marks. Not everything that we say is development is good in everything. And remember, when we started this discussion, I said the internet has got the good side and the bad side. I'll give you an example. When I started using the internet with my peers, you know, despite a lot of good things that are there, you know what people would spend their time on the internet? All those things that your mother and father wouldn't want to know you were searching for on the internet. That's what people would be looking for, like pornography, anything that is devious or controversial. Indeed, there is also plenty of stuff. For example, if you are a student, lot of stuff that is positive, and other general information that is useful, not necessarily controversial, but just useful for that advancements of human life. But people choose not to spend more of their time on that. They spend more time on the other side. So this awareness to me is trying to say, hey, out there, we've got this new thing. Please be careful. While they are good things, know that there's this other side. And remember, we are not only talking of content, we are also talking of people. You know, you can actually hook up with people in the cyberspace. And you end up hearing things like cyberbullying. You end up hearing things like people were brainwashed into doing certain things by people they have never met, but they met them on in the cyberspace. So these are the sort of things that we are trying to flag. It's not like we are saying this whole thing, the cyberspace or the internet is bad. No. That's not the gist. The thing is, let's watch out for things that are unproductive, things that are destructive, you know.
Okay, well, we'll take a break just now, but I have to ask this question before we go, because on behalf of a young person sitting right here at home right now, you and I were both young people, and at some point we all accessed content that we didn't want our parents to know.
Exactly.
Whether it was books or whatever the case may be.
Guilty.
Or you know, watching a film when I was 10 years old and it was written out under 13. Or, you know, are we not thinking about the principle as humans and thinking that the internet is the bad guy? I want you to think about that before over the break. Like, is the internet the real problem, or is there a bigger problem in as far as how we take care of our children, especially when the internet is concerned? It's ZFM Stereo, my station, your station, the hottest radio in town.
The platform. Step up and speak up.
You're still tuning into ZFM Stereo, my station, your station, the hottest radio in town. We've got 17 minutes left in the show, and we are talking about the internet. And we've gotten deep into a very passionate situation, parenting and the internet. And I've got a question here. First, I want to ask this one before I ask a parenting one. It says, what if I suspect that maybe I already responded to a fake email. Is there anything to undo this? Do you think it is wise maybe to open a new email address? Because now I suspect that I've responded to many of these fake things. So what happens if I've already responded to a fake email? What do I do?
Yeah, sometimes when you respond, you may not be affected as bad as it can get. Probably this person who was trying their luck. You know, there are levels. They are amateurs of these hackers or these people who do these things. There are some people who just do it for fun, to test whether they are able to do it. There are people who are serious, you know. But sometimes when they realize that this person, maybe they have no value to us, they may not come back to you. But if you have something, or if they think they can get mileage out of you as a person, or as out of something that you have as a person, then there's a likelihood that they may follow you up again. So if you realize that you, after clicking or playing around with such an email, something continues to happen, yes, you might actually need to probably discontinue using that email and maybe open a new one. Or sometimes you can, some of these providers, they also have facilities where you can maybe report the issue, and then they can actively monitor where it's coming from. But it's not easy, so probably the best could be to discard and use another one, a new one.
So in this instance, we're talking about spam, isn't it?
There's spam, yeah. Spam is like, probably they someone is trying to add, to push some content. Maybe it could be an advert. They want you to get a certain message. So if it keeps coming, it can become a nuisance. So sometimes if you don't have a way to stop it, you might actually need to shut down. But spam, ordinary spam, usually is not a very big issue. The companies that provide these free emails, internet emails, they're able to effectively deal with spams.
Because I know, for example, there are a bunch of local companies. So I'm not even thinking about, because many people think, you know, when they think about spam, it's about thinking about, you know, some Chinese, Russian or Indian company. But there's so many of these companies that suddenly have your email address And I've had to close two email addresses over that. And you send, click unsubscribe, and they say, yes, you've unsubscribed. And suddenly...
they come back again.
They come back again. And yeah. And they're sending you... And the funny thing, sometimes they're sending you information from reputable companies. So reputable companies sometimes using this spam technologies, spam companies, will tell you that I can send emails to... 40,000 people in my database, and meanwhile they've only got 300 in that they got legally.
Spam, ordinarily, you know, when it started, spam, it was not such like a bad thing, you know. It's like it was something that clever people started using to try and reach out to a lot of people. The only problem was I'm getting an email which I did not solicit for, so people, and the more they come, especially if they come in numbers, probably they become one too many in your inbox for other emails that you would normally be interested in. So it becomes a sort of a nuisance. If you realize, even locally, we now have companies that are specializing in harvesting people's emails, and if they suspect you are a potential client for this particular product, you can be hit by such an unsolicited email.
And is this discussion being had? Because, you know, like somebody says there, that email address, I'm a victim. I don't even know what happened. Now I don't own my email address. And the funny thing is, you know, I don't even read the email addresses. So it actually defeats the purpose of somebody who claims that they've got access to 40,000 email addresses, yet they don't.
That's the problem with spam. And that's why probably even the law is actually now coming in to try and say, to try and control it. But it's not easy. That's why the spam is still around. And technology has also come up to try and deal with spam. So you find there are some commercial pieces of software that you can use as either as an individual or at corporate level, where email that comes in is screened, and once it is suspected to be spam, it can be blocked. But the people who generate spam are very clever. They keep learning how spam is blocked, and they change a few things. So it's like it's a cat and mouse a game. Today you block them, after a few days they've come up with a new trick, and you start seeing spam trickling into your inbox. And so it has become a problem now. So, and sometimes people are also claiming that some of these people who develop software to deal with spam, they are the ones who also leak some tricks to bypass spam. So it's you as an individual or as individual ordinary people, it's not easy to completely shut out spam. But there are some of these software tools that can mitigate.
0731-168-045. Somebody says hackers have a target market per se, and Zimbabwe in general is not their target market because we're so primitive in terms of tech. If there are any hackers at all, it's just to read your messages, have access to your Facebook, and nothing out of the ordinary like hacking a bank. Is that true?
Not quite. We have had cases of ransomware where some big corporates have been hit. And the intention is probably if we hit, they will blink and pay some money, and then we get some money. You know, the bandwidth to the internet for Zimbabwe is now more than what it was, say, 10 years ago. So when you have bandwidth, it's like you now have a highway, which is easy for these people to come in. It's one attraction which attracts these people. Then the fact that we are primitive, like what this contributor is saying, say we are not yet very high tech. To some extent, I agree. We have some weaknesses as a country and as individual institutions and people. So that in itself can be a weakness. So people can actually come in, and usually some of these people, when they come in, they may not be targeting something specific. They'll just be probing, and in the probe they will end up finding something which is very valuable. So
because of vulnerability, yeah, in terms of not knowing the technology.
Exactly. So you cannot lie back and relax and say, no, we are not high tech, so we are not an attraction. We just need to up our game and make sure we have protection.
Okay, what I do want to ask now, getting back to the issue of children, because that's the most vulnerable for me. I know there's a lot of people that are almost vulnerable, and sending your questions on 0731-168-045. We've still got 7 minutes of the show. The question is, should parents actually be interested in what is their children are doing on the internet? And if so, what measures should they put in place to protect their children?
Parents need to be interested in what their children are doing on the internet. I know you can't be with your child all the time, but the interest starts with educating your child on what the internet is all about, what the good things you can do or you can find there are, what the bad things are, so that as a child grows into using this technology, they are actually informed and they do the right thing. Of course, you cannot expect a child to do everything right all the time, but as a parent, you need to play a part. You cannot just ignore and say, well, they will be on their own, or pretend that things are okay out there when we know they are dangerous in the cyberspace. So children, parents need to take an active interest and they should go to the extent of, for example, making sure that the computer, if there's a computer at home, say, for example, that the children use, it must have basic controls. The software that we can use to make sure it blocks access to controversial or bad sites. If parents talk to experts, you can get to know a few things that can be done. Some of them very simple that are inherent in the software that comes with an ordinary computer, so that you block certain things. But of course, as you know, our children, some of them, they are now more advanced than many of us, so they can always outmaneuver you. But it's better to be outmaneuvered and when you've tried as a parent to do your responsibilities. So you also need to have ground rules. For example, you say no one is going to continue using a computer, especially for internet, beyond a certain time, let's say beyond 10 p.m. You need to, if you think your children are not taking heed, sometimes you need to take the computer or the gadget after a certain time, so that they will use it tomorrow, or they'll be able to use it in an open arena where you can see what's going on. Because when they're in their bedroom, you never know what's going on. Parents also need to know, for example, to make sure that grown-up children, they are also aware that probably some things that they may be able to access as maybe over 18 children is not suitable for a child who is 7 years or 5 years. So if it's a brother or a sister who is grown up, probably they may be seeing certain things because they now have better understanding and better self-control. But they should not expose that to their sibling who is maybe 5 years or 6 years. So, but those things will not happen automatically. The parent has to be active. So, in short, parents need to be very interested and they really need to intervene, as opposed to taking a back seat.
But then somebody could argue that, you know, your child, you give them a phone, they go to school, or if not that, the children from other parents are not as, you know, fastidious and as far as this is concerned. What do you do? Because this thing doesn't look like it's one. You could walk around, you know, there's content all over the place. You're walking into to a place, there's stuff you have no control over. What do you do?
It's complicated. But it's for a parent to have this dialogue with their children. It's different from kind of ignoring it. At least you need to have a dialogue, let them understand, also hear their side of the story, check on what they are frequently accessing, you know, so that they grow into understanding that it's not everything good that is on in the cyberspace. And eventually, it's just like, even if we are not talking about the internet, there are other devious things that are growing up children do, but you need to teach them. For example, when they go to school, or when they go like your boarding school, they are there for 3 months, you are not there, you can't control. But if you keep on hammering certain things, and eventually they'll get to know that this is not good, or this is not acceptable, and probably they'll change, as opposed to just keeping quiet and ignoring. And in addition to parents, here I personally I would think that it's not just the father, the real father and mother. I'm also looking at institutions, schools, churches. They also need to take part in this war to make sure that they also educate young people growing up, so that they concentrate on using the internet for productive purposes, as opposed to using it for other things that may end up damaging their lives in the future.
Okay, the productive internet that you can use the internet for is, keep listening to ZFM Stereo on zfmstereo.co.zw, and also follow us on Twitter at ZFM Stereo, on Facebook, facebook.com/ZFM Stereo, on Instagram at ZFM Stereo ZW, and of course this podcast is available, this broadcast available as a podcast within 24 hours of broadcast. Thank you very much, Mr. Godfrey Mataga from the head of IT at Zimpost. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
And for everyone at home, thank you very much for taking part in the discussion. If you're not at home, you're somewhere out there, but you're still listening to ZFM Stereo. Coming up is Mona Lisa Dube with the Y Zone. I'm back with you on Monday on the platform. Stay tuned to ZFM Stereo, as I said. And as I always say, from where I come from, my name is Larry Quiridaya. Asibisa Sevenza. Take care of yourself.